Hello and welcome to Parallel Coaching Academy. My name is Hayley Bergman and I'm going to be taking you through the entire series for your level two principles of exercise, fitness and health. And we're kicking off with module one, and this is all about the effect of exercise on the body. So really it's about understanding what happens when we do exercise and how does that impact our body both for short and long term. Now it's a really important one for your exam, obviously, that's why it's in here. But I have to admit, with all of these principles ones, they're really, really useful for when you actually start programming with your clients, whether that's that you're working with your level two gym instructor at the moment, or maybe you're going to become a level three Pilates trained or yoga, or you're working towards your personal trainer. Regardless of the route that you're taking and your need to do this principles exam, the effect, knowing the effect of exercise on the body is really, really key. So let's have a look at what we're going to cover today. So with it, by the end of this module, you're going to be able to identify the effect of exercise on the body. You're going to be able to understand the long-term adaptations of exercising. Understand and know and understand the short-term effects of exercising. As part of that, you're going to be able to identify some smart programming options as well for your clients. And I'm going to try and have this across a breadth of different types of subjects, because everybody likes different types of exercises, everybody likes different types of training, but I'm going to sort of look at it from a fairly generic point of view so it's appropriate to everybody as we head through. And then there's also an opportunity to complete a cheat sheet. So you'll find this next to the video. You can basically download it straight away and you can then work on that throughout the video if you like, or other people kind of leave it until the very end and then use it as knowledge. So find out what works for you, but this cheat sheet is basically download and then you've got that either to have and work alongside or to use it as a test at the very end. So let's kick straight into the content. And there are when we're looking at the effects of exercise on the body, we've kind of got to start with the body itself. So if you kind of divide the body into three different types of sections that exercise affects, there's one area in relation to brain and nerves, and this is the control center. So we know that the body is controlled by the brain and by the entire nervous system. Now this is in this little bubble down on the left hand side here that you can see. Now that area is really important to consider because exercise has a huge impact on that. However, those specific areas don't come up that much in the principles exam. So we're going to be focusing mostly on cardiovascular and respiratory, which obviously includes our heart, lungs and circulation. But also we're going to be looking at musculoskeletal, which is our bones, our muscles, our connective tissue and our posture. Finding these two areas in particular, they're the areas that we're going to look at mostly in relation to the effects of exercise on the body. But it's also good for you to understand that brain and our nerves, because at the end of the day, our respiratory is controlled by our brain and nervous system, and also our musculoskeletal is controlled by our brain and nervous system. So they all work together regardless. Look in depth at these particular areas. And it's also good to know that the effect of exercise on the body has both short-term and long-term effects. Now these are very different and they have huge differences in terms of what your client will see during the session, so on a daily basis, but also what they'll see long-term as their goal. So most people have a long-term goal, they want to lose weight, get fitter, blah, 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 and they're very general. But they'll have these specific long-term goals that they want to work towards, but they won't necessarily see that in the short term, it might not look and feel like that. So there might be some other implications that we need to be considering in the short term that affect as we approach the long term. And that's what we're going to really dial into. So hopefully you'll get some good grounding and understanding here. Now, let's start with long-term effect. I always think you should start with the end in mind. So start long-term and look at how this kind of, how exercise can affect our body in the long term. Now, the best way of remembering these as different to the short term is that really these are the benefits of exercise. They're all positive things, positive changes that are happening in our body as a result of exercising regularly. So if we now exercise regularly for 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 6 months, a year, 5 years, 10 years, these benefits are going to start to body. And that's what we're selling our clients, really. So when we're sort of telling them, these are all the benefits of exercise, this is what you need to be doing in order to lead a healthier, longer life. These are the benefits, and these are sort of the physiological adaptations of what's happening in our body in order to benefits that we phrase as a healthier, happier, longer life, basically. So let's start with the cardiovascular and respiratory adaptations. Now, cardiovascular, I mean obviously heart. So cardio means heart, vascular means veins. So you know it's the heart and circulatory system, and respiratory is to do with the lungs. So we're looking heart and lungs, basically. So let's start off with the lungs. Now, we know that if we exercise regularly on a regular basis, and that involves hopefully some cardio and some resistance training, regardless, we'll go through those on later videos. But when we're looking at that, we're going to adapt to have an increased lung capacity. Now, there's a really key difference here that's worth me explaining, and that is that your lungs don't increase in size. The lung space that you have remains exactly the same. And that's quite often a question in your exam. They will say something along the lines of, do your lungs increase in size or do they increase in capacity? It's the capacity that increases, not the size. And that's because you've got these little sacs of air inside the lungs. They're not just two great big sacs. They are little tiny sacs of air, and we basically get better at using these sacs of air, so we have the capacity to take on more oxygen and more air, and then more carbon dioxide as it comes out. So we can use them better, and the capacity is greater, but they don't get any bigger. Get an increase in gaseous exchange. Now, if you've done your level 2 anatomy physiology, or you're working towards that, then you'll know what gaseous exchange already is. So take these little alveoli air sacs that we have in our lungs in, and then over this little micro barrier, the oxygen moves across into our capillaries, goes into our blood system, works its way to its muscles, the oxygen gets used, and then carbon dioxide works its way back into the blood and then comes back to these same alveoli, jumps the barrier again, ready for us to be able to breathe out. Now, that gaseous exchange is when these little air molecules, whether that's oxygen or carbon dioxide, jump the barrier into our blood. That's all gaseous exchange is. You're exchanging gases. Perfect. Okay, so that's all about the respiratory side of things and what happens on a long term. And obviously, respiratory alone is going to make people feel like they are fitter because they are able to go longer with. So let's look at the long term effects of sort of on the heart in particular. So have a reduction in heart rate, resting heart rate. So if you were to take your pulse now and then at the end of training regularly for a couple of years, you're going to potentially have a lower resting heart rate at the end. And that's also linked with fitness. So the fitter you are, the less beats are needed from your heart in order to get the blood round. So your heart becomes stronger in contraction, which means that you don't need as many beats, which means that rate or resting heart rate is a good sign of fitness. So resting heart rate can go down. Then there's also an increase in stroke volume. Now, what do I mean by this? Is that this muscular boundary around the muscular heart, stronger, it can create a stronger contraction. And as it creates this stronger contraction, that means that it can be pushed out. And the more blood coming out of the heart at each point is an increased volume. So the stroke is the heartbeat, that stroke of the heart, that brumph that you feel. That's when all this blood is then rushing out of the heart. And as your heart gets stronger, your stroke volume, i.e. the amount of blood you can push out with every heartbeat, will increase. And also you're going to have an increased cardiac output. Now, a cardiac output is just the combination of your heart rate and your stroke volume. If we had a lower heart rate but a higher stroke volume, then we're going to be able to push out more blood from our heart on a regular basis. So there is a consideration here for your own fitness as well, which means that you've kind of got more tolerance. So if you think that you're going to climb a great big mountain and you do that when you're fit compared to when you're unfit, in terms of our normal sort of wording for the, or phrasing for the word fit. Think about those differences. You're climbing a mountain and your heart rate, if you're unfit, goes through the roof. So it goes up really, really fast. And that's because your heart rate isn't necessarily as strong. Whereas when you're fitter, you're able to keep the heart rate lower and just have good solid bounding in the heart itself. And that's that long-term effects of exercise where your heart's getting stronger and got a better output. Stress on the heart, which in turn is less likely to cause problems down the line in terms of other heart-related conditions. Now let's look at what's actually happening in the blood and the veins and the arteries as well. Now, because of the increase in stroke volume, increase in blood volume, which means that there is more red blood cells in our blood, and as we sort of increase that stroke volume, all of these red blood cells flow around in our body, and we've got this increase in blood volume generally. That's also accountable to the fact that we actually grow more capillaries. So capillaries are the smallest, like the tiniest of our blood vessels. And they're the ones that are generally around our muscles, or they're around our organs. And they're the ones that allow for the gas exchange to happen. They're the ones that allow for things to pass across, for that transportation of the stuff we're carrying in our blood to go to where we want it to get to. So if we have more of these, then we're able to then deliver more of that lovely oxygen gaseous exchange, deliver more of the blood that we in our body. And because we've got more, now cater for that with our more capillary network, it's like we physically grow more road network in our body, which means we can just deliver more great things and get rid of more waste. That's basically what's happening in our body. We become more efficient, which is amazing. Then there is an increase in blood lipid profile. Now, what I mean by this is that fats, for all you need to know for level two really, is that the balance of fats, i.e. lipid profile, you might know this as cholesterol, these balance in our body. So we get a better profile, a better blood lipid profile. And that's all you need to know for the level two principles. We won't go any deeper than that. Now, blood pressure is an interesting one. Because we are increasing our stroke volume and we've reduced our resting heart rate, we actually get normalized or reduced blood pressure as a result of long-term effects on exercise. And if you look at all of these effects, the lung capacity, the gaseous exchange, the resting heart rate, the blood capillarization, all of that stuff basically mean we're more efficient. So our blood pressure is going to normalize. And that is fantastic news for clients that have got elevated blood pressure, or they're at risk of having elevated blood pressure. Because we know that blood pressure, when it's raised, can cause stroke, it can cause heart attacks. And obviously, that's a really good selling point for any kind of exercise, is that not only are you fitter and stronger, but you can live longer, you can reduce things of strokes and heart attacks. Fantastic. You reduce your risk of coronary heart disease because of that balance of lipid profile and because of your reduction in cholesterol. So if you have a high cholesterol, a long-term effect of exercise is that that will come down. So essentially, there are loads of changes in your body that happen long term. Some stuff increases, some stuff reduces, but it's always going to be a good thing. So when you have these questions in your exam and it says, which one is the long term effect of exercise? It will try and trick you. So it might have like an increase in resting heart rate and a reduction in resting heart rate. Think to yourself, which one is a good thing that's happening? Oh, I want it to be a lower heart rate because that's a sign of fitness and health. Then that's the one they're looking for. So that will help you on your exam. It's always going to be a benefit in terms of long-term effects of exercise. So that's the cardiovascular and respiratory adaptations. And really, I think they're quite logical, because if you think about the physical manifestations of somebody that is training a lot, think about someone that you consider to be really, really fit, like even an Olympic athlete, Paula Radcliffe, whoever you want to consider, they're going to have all of this going on. So it's a good way to kind of suggest, okay, the long-term effect of exercise when it's completed regularly, is all of these amazing things. And that's just the cardiovascular and respiratory side of things. So now let's look at the musculoskeletal adaptations, and we're going to start with the bones in particular. So with this bit in particular, and looking at the bones, the biggest thing that you're going to hear over and over again is that there is an increase in bone density. So if you do weight-bearing exercise on a regular basis, now by weight-bearing, I mean where you're physically carrying the weight of your body. It doesn't have to mean that you're powerlifting or you're lifting Olympic bars or whatever else. But it just needs to be that you're lifting the weight of your actual body. So, for example, if I was to go walking or running or jogging or anything whereby I'm lifting my body weight, even just standing, I'm increasing the density of my bones. And that's because they adapt to the stimulus that's put upon them. However, if I do things like swimming or rowing or cycling, then I'm not bearing the weight of my body. So actually, although you get all the other benefits, you don't get an increase in bone density. Worth bearing in mind, especially when you start working with clients that are getting older that need that increased bone density, or just for general health. So it's good to have a mixture of both weight-bearing and non-weight-bearing exercises. Now, also, the other things that happen here is that because you're using your joints and you're putting them through strain, especially if you think resistance exercises or weight-bearing exercises, your joints need to stabilize, and they start to increase their stability because the network around your joints improve. That's ligaments and tendons and muscles. They all improve, which increases your stability of your joints, which means you're less likely to get injured. Then there's joint mobility and range of movement. The more you use it, the better you get at your sort of degrees of movement, your range of movement in every joint. And you'll know this because if you have ever started, say, yoga, for example, and you start out and you're like, oh, God, I can hardly hold a downward dog. And then as you kind of get into it and practice it more, your hips become more pliable, all your muscles become more pliable, and you actually increase the range of movement of all of your joints. And that makes it much easier to perform that movement. And that's because you're adapting to that exercise, to that movement that you're doing regularly. Now, also, you get an increase in connective tissue strength. So the connective tissues, like I said a moment ago, are the ones that create that joint stability. They're your tendons and your ligaments, and they wrap around those joints and linking your joints to your bones, to your muscles. So they're really important to increase the strength of. They're going to help reduce any damage from exercise itself or from muscle tears, etc., based purely on having a nice, strong connective tissue. The bone related or more passive areas of the body. Now we're going to look at muscles. So of long-term effects of exercise are going to be muscle related. So you can get an increase in muscle hypertrophy. Now, some people call it hypertrophy, some people call it hypertrophy. Doesn't really matter either way, as long as you know that that means an increase in size of the muscle. Now, what's happening basically is that you have the muscle, you're exercising it, and you get these little tiny micro tears. And as these little micro tears resynthesize and grow, they actually layer down more proteins, which essentially creates a slightly bigger size. And it takes a lot to happen. So if you take someone who's a bodybuilder, they work their butt off to get bigger and bigger and bigger, but that doesn't happen overnight, and it doesn't happen by lifting a weight. So sometimes when people go, oh, but I don't see it as a good thing that I'm increasing in size, it's always a good thing that you're increasing in size of the muscle because it becomes more efficient at what it's doing. Now, even if you get the typical beginner female to the gym and they turn around and say that they don't want to lift heavy weights because they don't want to get big, they really aren't for the volume they're going to do, and because they're lacking in so much testosterone. So you can knock that one out of the ballpark straight away. Just by picking up a slightly heavier weight does not suddenly make you into Arnie. It's a case of gradually working with that muscle to actually increase muscle hypertrophy, which is actually what people want. They want that definition of a bigger muscle with reduced body fat. So actually the effect of exercise is exactly that, a leaner body. I've got reduction of body fat in there as well. But the next one is an increase in neuromuscular connection. Have you ever noticed if you've started doing an exercise, let's say an aerobics class or something like that, that's a little bit more complex, you start off and you're fumbling around your feet and you're falling over and all sorts. But as you do it more, it becomes easier. And anything that you do, practice helps. And that's because the connection to your muscles become quicker. They crease, they become more efficient, which means that you're able to communicate with your brain more. Muscular connection is improved. Your muscles, mitochondria, so you've got a little powerhouse inside each muscle. And this little powerhouse, imagine it like a little factory, basically it's called mitochondria. So this factory is called mitochondria, and it's inside every single muscle cell. Now, in that, it is basically generating energy from oxygen. So if we have more of these little mitochondria, then we actually get better at creating energy from the oxygen that we're bringing in. This all links across to that increased capillaries and better ability to take on oxygen. It all works together, and that's fantastic how our whole body system works together to be more efficient. Then there is this increase in resting metabolic rate. Now, some people sort of say, oh, well, I just want to lose weight. And they think it's just about the calories that they burn in the session itself. But actually, the leaner you are, the more muscle mass you have, and the leaner you are, so more muscle mass and less body fat, that means that your metabolic rate is actually having to work harder. That means your body is having to metabolize things. So it's going to burn more calories even at rest, which means you can be sat on the sofa, being a couch potato, and burn more energy. So you burn more calories. And that means that you're actually going to have a reduction in body fat overall, because the demand of the body, even at rest, is much higher. So they're all good long-term effects for the muscle side. Now, in terms of posture and core stability, there are also a lot of good effects for most exercises that people will be doing. It does increase your posture, but you obviously there is a caveat to that, in that you need to be considering the types of exercises you do, and we're going to look into those as well. There is an increase in core stability, and also that control of your core and center, so that you're able to actually engage it and turn it off as you need to. So turn it on, and that's going to help you with risk of injury, and so that if you're about to fall over, you're able to catch yourself because you've got that core stability there. It's going to help you with your coordination and balance, which is going to reduce your risk of injury as well. So there are a lot of long-term effects of exercise on this screen as we look at it. Chunk it into the six that there are. You know that something's going to affect the lungs, the heart, and then the blood vessels. Something's going to affect the skeleton, the muscles, and the posture. And use these six to then start thinking, okay, well, what would be a good thing that would happen to my muscles? What would be a good thing that would happen to my posture? And they're going to be the long-term effects of exercise, essentially. So you can use a little bit of logic when applying these and going through them. And like I say, the exam questions will probably use this same kind of wording, but it'll be whether it increases or reduces that are the place it's going to try and catch you out. But remember, you're looking for the benefit. The long-term effects of exercise are 9 times out of 10 all benefits. Okay. So let's look at the short-term effect of exercise. Now, before I go into this, what I really want you to do is I want you to imagine you are running on a treadmill. Now, I'm starting with a treadmill because I'm going to start with cardiovascular. So it makes a little bit more sense and a little bit more easy to understand. Now, you might physically be actually doing that, in which case, good on you. That's fantastic that you're able to listen to this and train at the same time and sort of get the body moving. But let's think about the short-term effects of exercise. This means the effects on the body whilst you're actually exercising. Okay, so we're running on a treadmill. And let's look at the effect that that has on our cardiovascular, which is our heart and blood vessels, and our lungs, which is a respiratory. So our breathing rate goes up. So if you're running on a treadmill now and I start to increase the intensity, your breathing rate will increase. And that's because the demand of your muscles go, you know what, we need some more oxygen in here, please. So it increases that. And then the muscles become able to uptake more oxygen as well. And then as part of this, you're looking at your heart rate on that treadmill, and you've got your heart rate strap on, you're looking at it, and the heart rate just keeps increasing. The more you increase the speed, the more your heart rate increases, and that's dealing with that demand. Your stroke volume increases, your cardiac output increases. Now, up. But remember, that's very different, isn't it, to what we had on the long-term effects, where your resting heart rate comes down with a long-term effect of exercise. But in the short term, it will increase. Now, something to consider here is that obviously if your clients have got any conditions that affect their heart and lungs, you need to exercise a lot of caution with them. And that's why there's a limit to who you can work with at certain levels, depending on the qualification you're doing. So if you're a level two gym instructor, you won't be able to work with clients that have hypertension, which is high blood pressure, or any particular heart problems or breathing problems or even asthma, because there are complications that happen. And it is a caution to be thinking of putting somebody that's in a unstable state with their health through a series of exercises that will increase the demand on the lungs and the heart when they already cannot deal with the pressure that they already have on the lungs and the heart. And this links us really to the sort of things, which is there will be an increase in blood flow straight away. And you can tell this because your skin goes red instantly, because the blood flow even to the skin is increased. And that happens via vasodilation. So your veins actually expand. So all your veins and arteries and blood vessels, they get a little bit wider to allow that excess blood flow through. Now, as they get wider and they allow more blood flow through, they actually push closer to the skin, which is why you see yourself going red. It's why when you're blushing, you go red. Some people go very red on their face. Some people more on their chest and their arms, for example. But basically, you're dilating so you can get more blood through. They're opening up. Now, there is also, even though the veins have opened up a little bit to allow for more blood through, because the flow is still larger than at rest. So this is like a river, a torrent of a river sort of flowing through. Imagine that we've just now put more water in. And we've sped it up, so it's going faster. So it's going to run through that same space, which means that the pressure has to go up, which means it looks like it's going faster, it's more furious. And that's what's happening in the blood. Now, there are two different parts of blood pressure. There's systolic, and you will cover these in your anatomy and physiology, so please make sure you're familiar with them. But the systole is the part where the heart is contracting, and the diastole is the part when the heart is dilating, so relaxing. Now, you've got these two different phases. Now, when you exercise, the systole will increase, and that's because there's more demand needed with every single beat of the heart. So every budumph, budumph that you feel, your systole pressure, which is the pressure in the arteries as your heart contracts, is going to be much greater because the demand on the heart is greater. Whereas if you whereas the diastole should stay about the same, because it's the pressure on the arteries when the heart is totally relaxed and there isn't any more demand on it. So usually the systole increases, but the diastole stays about the same. Then there is an increase in carbon dioxide in the blood, which we know happens because we're working harder, the demand on our muscles is more, our waste products increase, and those waste products that come out are going to be carbon dioxide and lactic acid. Now, as those waste products come out, we've got to be able to get rid of them. So they've got to go into the blood so that we can export them and get rid. I've already said about you going red, that's the vasodilation, but our body temperature increases because part of the other waste products of generating energy is that our temperature that we generate heat, our temperature increases. So that's why you get hot, you get sweaty, and our way of sweating is basically us getting rid of the heat in our body is evaporation. So you sweat, your body puts this excess water on the outside of your body, and then the breeze, lovely breeze that's happening around you, starts to evaporate that off of the body, which has a cooling effect. So our body temperature will increase, we'll sweat, etc. Now, and I tell you all of this, you know most of this because you train. So when you train and you get to a certain point, you can feel this happening. But you also need to know that it doesn't just happen when you're training extreme, when you're sprinting your butt off. It actually also happens even if you just go for a leisurely walk. It's just because it's less extreme, we don't feel the effects of that as much. So regardless of the intensity of exercise, just know that it will be in line with these short-term effects. So the intensity and the effects sort of run linear. So the harder you make it, the more you'll see these short-term effects. The easier you make it, the less you'll see them physically, but they do still happen in the body. Okay, so let's also continue a little bit more. And there's some cautions that we need to think about in relation to the short-term effects of exercise. And one of these is going to be blood pooling. Pooling has probably happened to most of us, but the nice way to kind of think about it straight off, if you're running on the treadmill, like we just were in our mind a second ago, you're running on the treadmill and then you don't slow down the speed, you just stop. So you get, maybe you're doing a sprint finish and you want to really, really hammer it out so you get that really good score in your fitness test, and you push and you push and you push and then you hit the stop button and then you just stand. And then maybe you walk off the back of the treadmill and you just stand there. And suddenly you feel a little bit lightheaded. You feel a little bit dizzy. And maybe you feel like your feet are going a bit warm or swollen. And for some people straight away, that's them, they're ready to pass out. Done. Lights out for a moment. And they're just going to faint and fall on the floor. For some people, they sort of take heed to the fact that they feel a bit dizzy and they'll sit down and take it easy. Or they'll just sort of walk it out and they're feeling better straight away. However, important to consider blood pooling, because you don't want this to happen with your clients on your watch. And there's certain things we can do that will help avoid this from happening. And this is going to make your clients feel more comfortable. It's going to make them feel safer, and they're going to be safer, full stop. So actually, it's a really important consideration in your programming. So what is blood pooling? Essentially, when you're exercising, your systolic blood pressure goes up. Like I said earlier, that's when your heart is actually contracting, and it's the pressure in your arteries whilst it's in the contracting phase. Then there is an increase in heart rate and blood flow to your muscles, and all of that continues. But when the demand stops, so you stop running, and it stops quicker than of all of those things, then all of the blood pressure, heart rate and blood flow going back to normal, then blood pressure drops really quickly. So if the blood pressure and then all your blood stays at your feet, so not enough goes up to your brain, so your blood pressure basically is dropping really quick as a result of stopping exercise very quickly. So you stop exercise suddenly, your heart rate, etc., carries on, but you don't have enough blood flow or blood pressure. Blood pressure drops through the floor. Your feet fill with your blood, and then not enough blood goes to your brain, and you end up feeling dizzy and or fainting. So it's something to really consider, in that we want to avoid this with our clients. So in order to avoid it, it's important to reduce the exercise intensity gradually at the end of a session. So yes, still do the sprint finish. That's fine. That's perfect. Record the time, but then walk it out. You want them to be gradually reducing that intensity. And that allows just this normalization of all systems together so that you don't get that blood pooling in the feet. A nice sort of rule of thumb for that is that if you get the heart rate below 120 before you stop exercise, before you step off that treadmill, then it's actually gonna be at a point whereby they feel fairly safe, they feel okay, and always cool down gradually. Main areas to be considering in all of that with the blood pooling. Now, if you've had blood pooling happen to you, then you know how uncomfortable it can feel. It really isn't very pleasurable. So we want to make sure our clients feel as safe as possible. So consider this when you're programming for your clients. What is that little tail off period that you can do in their exercise? And I don't just mean off of the back of cardio or sprinting or cycling sprints. It's actually also with resistance training as well. And that's because you still get this effect. You still get an increased blood pressure. In fact, quite a lot if you're doing things like that involve a big isometric contraction, like squatting or something whereby you're having to really resist against a heavy weight, then you're going to have an increase in blood pressure. So you you can get dizziness. You can sort of feel pretty faint afterwards. And it's a case of keeping the body and the muscles moving gently as you come off the end of that set, rather than just standing still all of a sudden. So that's something to bear in mind, is your blood pooling. Okay, so we've kind of looked at the short-term effects of exercise in relation to cardiovascular and respiratory. Now we're going to look in relation to the musculoskeletal side. We know that there's going to be a blood flow increase to the muscles themselves. We spoke about this on the last one. We were talking about blood flow. The muscles have a bigger demand. We need to get more blood to them, so that increases. The temperature of the muscle increases, and you know this because you feel hot and your muscle gets more pliable, doesn't it? So whilst you're training, this could be cardiovascular. We could still be running on that treadmill. We could be doing squats. We could be doing press-ups. It doesn't matter what type of exercise it is. Remember, all of this happens just at different levels depending on the intensity we put it through. So the temperature of the muscle increases. The flexibility of that muscle increases. The vasodilation increases. And that's, remember when I said that the veins increase in size? So all those blood vessels start to get bigger, which allows more blood flow through. And that obviously is going to allow more oxygen and going to allow us to use more oxygen. But it's also going to allow us to get rid of more waste products, which is obviously really important. There's also an increased contraction of muscle fibers. So more intensity we move at, the more fibers we recruit in our muscles. And that greater contractions and greater strength. The more we use that, the more efficient we become at contracting the muscle fibers, i.e. we get stronger. There's going to be an increased tearing of muscle fibers. Now, you might say, that doesn't sound like a good thing to happen. I don't want my muscle fibers to tear. But we need these little micro tears, and they're only tiny, but those little micro tears that happen right in on our tiny muscle fibers, those tears allow us to get bigger and stronger, because it's how they heal that allows us to move forward and get stronger, have hypertrophy, have more endurance. So tearing the muscle fibers, although it sounds horrible, is actually a good thing. But that happens in the short term, and it can cause pain in the short term. So people can feel that. And if you're starting with clients that are new to the industry or new to sort of exercising, then really we want to be looking at how do we minimize that tearing of muscle fibers for their first session and gradually increase it over time, because the rebuilding of this tearing actually hurts, which we're going to talk about in relation to DOMS in just a moment. But this tearing of muscle fibers can feel uncomfortable, and we want them to feel comfortable to start off with before we start making them uncomfortable, if that makes sense, and starting really progressing them. So we also get better at utilizing fuel. So our fuel is adenosine triphosphate, and we use a lot of that. Whenever our muscle contracts, we use adenosine triphosphate. That's our currency of fuel. And we talk about that in the anatomy and physiology a lot of detail, but just think, every time a contraction happens in the muscle, fuel gets used. It's the same thing as using the car. Every time you start a car, every mile you do in your car, you use fuel. It's exactly the same. And that obviously has an impact, but we need to know that we're using fuel from a short-term effect of exercise, because we're going to want to put more fuel in eventually. So it has a nutritional impact as well. Then we have an increase in waste products, which is obviously our carbon dioxide and our lactic acid in our muscles. Now, the lactic acid is that horrible burning feeling that when you spend too long in an anaerobic state, which we'll talk about in the anatomy and physiology module, but the lactic acid is this waste product that builds up, and you can feel this acid building up in the system. And that's because you just can't get rid of it in time, because your intensity of your exercise is too high. So you need to reduce the intensity of the exercise, and then as a result, your lactic acid will come down. But that's excruciating burning feeling, especially when you're first starting out. So again, if you've got a beginner, you might want to avoid going to extreme levels with this, so that they have a tolerable level straight away and they're not having a scary experience of exercise in their very first session. Now, throughout this, for musculoskeletal, there is also more core activation when you're exercising compared to when we're slouching on the sofa. And the more intense we make it, so the heavier we go on that lift, we're going to naturally activate our core more. We're going to naturally have a bigger joint range of movement as well. in that exercise. It was also a in terms of like the actual bones and skeletal system, when we start moving, we get more synovial fluid in our joints. So if you look at your joint now, let's look at an elbow joint, for example, you've got a little sac of fluid in there, which basically lubricates the joint. And that little sac of jelly fluid is there to cushion the joint and lubricate it. Now, the more we exercise, whether that's cardio or resistance training, that then starts to free up a little bit. It's like it's getting warmer, so you secrete a little bit more fluid, and that's like spraying a little bit WD-40 in your joints. It feels amazing because it takes the pressure off. It makes everything feel a lot looser, which increases your joint major movement. And then that also means that it's more prepared to help you with shock absorption as well in the actual session. So because all this happens within the session, there's a lot of short-term benefits straight up, which is why we feel good in the moment, because our body suddenly becomes really efficient when we're exercising. Once we've gone and like, got past the warm-up and that feeling of like, oh, my joints are achy today, or my muscles are achy, and we start getting more blood flow to them, and we start secreting more synovial fluid, our core fires up, and we just get to the point of actually using our muscles and feeling a lot better, you'll feel a lot better during that session straight away. And that's because everything becomes more efficient and everything starts working in sync. And that's what's really good about obviously exercising. But there are obviously considerations within this, like I said, with the fact that there is damage happening to our muscle fibers in terms of tearing. There is lactic acid building up. There is carbon dioxide building up. And we need to consider this when we're working, especially with beginners, that longer warm-up allows them to get used to that. And also we want to be keeping their sessions fairly simple and light on the early sessions before we move up to making stuff harder. Okay, so let's have a look at something called DOMS. Now, this is definitely a short-term effective exercise, but remember I said that you get all these little micro tears happen in your muscle. Now, this is the effect of that, and it can last for a little while. So, but it's still definitely short term. Now, you've probably experienced it. So you go to the gym or you go to a class and maybe you're doing something new or you've just changed some variables massively. So you're deciding to have a really good go at it. You lift up some heavier weights and you get moving. And then that day you feel okay, a little bit achy, nothing major. Next day, starting to ache a little bit. The following day, it feels like you've been hit by a bus. And that's literally because your muscles are soreness. And we call it delayed onset muscle soreness. Now, some people think that means that something's going wrong or that they're actually dying, like this sort of mem explains on the image. But it's not that. It's actually that your muscles are repairing themselves. And that takes a little while to kick in. So here's the process. The name you need to know, and you need to know this definition, DOMS stands for delayed onset muscle soreness. So make sure you remember that one. Then there is, so during exercise, our muscle fibers get microscopic tears. That's what I was saying about with those little tiny tears that are happening. These tears are then protected by increased swelling to the area. So if you notice when you're training, let's say we do a good bicep session together, so we're doing biceps, all these tears happen straight away. After your session, you get a really good pump on. And that's because all the swelling goes to that area. So increased water and heat goes right around the affected area so that you get an increase in size straight away. And that's because the swelling is protecting these tears. Just like if you sprain an ankle, your ankle like explodes, doesn't it? It just goes really, really massive. And that's because all the swelling comes to the area to protect it. That's all that's happening, but microscopically to the tears in the, say, bicep, for example. Now, with this water retention and with the heat, there's a cause of numbing to the nerves. So with the fact that this swelling happens, slightly numbed. So they can't necessarily feel the fact that all these tears are there. But as the tears heal and the swelling reduces, then extra proteins get laid down. And this increases the size of the muscle fibers, which is what we want. So microscopically, but they get bigger. Now, this process stimulates the nerves and it causes a pain, a dull aching pain. And it's as the fibers are regenerating themselves and the fact that the nerves are being stimulated by that. And this torn fibers are avoided in muscle recruitment, making the muscle feel weaker. So all of that time, your muscles are aching and they feel weak. So say you've done a leg day, and then 2 days later you are faced with a massive climb up a hill or up a set of stairs. Your muscles feel so weak and heavy as you kind of trudge up these stairs. But actually, all that's happening is your body is recruiting the muscle fibers that are still good, that you didn't tear. They're trying to avoid the torn ones. So that means that you've got less potential of recruiting more fibers, etc. And that's why if you've got like a race or an event planned, that you want to have a couple days of deloading where you're not using those muscles. You're not ripping any more muscle fibers, which means that you're ready to then use them to their full capacity for your event or to get your personal best, etc. Now, the final bit on this to remember is that it can take sort of 12 to 48 hours after exercise. It is recorded to be as long as 72 hours, which obviously is sort of 3 days worth of aching, but it will get worse after about 12 hours. So that's how you know it's delayed onset muscle soreness, is when after 12 hours, then it really starts kicking in. And that's when, and generally, actually, it's worth sort of saying that some people say, the longer it is before it kicks in, before it aches, is a good sign that you've actually done more damage, i.e. more micro tears, more gains later in relation to hypertrophy, in inverted commas. Okay, so caused by. The things that cause DOMS in particular are going to be eccentric training. Now, eccentric training is when you go slow when you're lowering the weight back down. So let's say we're doing bicep curls, and I lift up the bicep, and then we lower it down really slowly. That's an eccentric training, and that really tears a lot of fibers and it increases the DOMS. I would probably say avoid that with beginners. You want to keep it at a nice steady pace, like 2 seconds up, 2 seconds down, so that they aren't actually being subjected to more DOMS than they need to. And that's also applies if things like yoga, where they're holding a pose for a long period of time, something along those lines. It's important to consider, like, actually, can we alter that timings of that to suit a more beginner client so they don't ache for days and days after? Sudden changes to training plans is a real big causer for DOMS, and also increasing training variables radically. So suddenly increasing the weight, suddenly changing the reps that you do, suddenly changing the range of movement that you do, rather than it being a gradual and progressive. So DOMS is a good thing. It shows that your muscles have worked hard and that they're now repairing, but it also needs to be exercised with a bit of caution, that you don't want to jump the body into too much straight away, else you're not going to be fit to do any other training. And with a beginner, that can really put them off. If you give them one hard session on the Monday, they're not going to want to come back in until Friday, in which case half the week has been lost. So you kind of want to, it's better to do progressive, and a little bit of aching is fine, but it, at least they're able to still walk and feel like they still want to exercise and keep the habit going. So cautions is, take it easy with beginners, inform clients about DOMS so they know what to expect. So when you're doing this session or their first introduction session, tell them that probably going to ache for a couple of days and that that's okay and it's normal and they're not injured. So that's important. And then also gradually progress the training plan so you don't get any sudden changes in there as well. So let's have a look at posture. So we've spoken a lot about musculoskeletal, we've spoken a lot about cardiovascular, but what actually happens on a short-term effect for posture with exercise? Now, I'll sort of introduce about the neutral spine and about a good ideal posture. So if you could just stand up for me, so stand up now. If you've been sitting down, or you've been sitting down long enough, it's time to stand up. And I want you to, if you can, get yourself side onto a mirror. If you can't, then use your mind's eye to imagine this as much as you possibly can. But we're going to look for some correct posture. So we're going to talk about neutral spine here. So if you stand with your feet facing forwards, about hip distance apart, and I want you to think about your weight being really totally even across those. So your weight's not totally in your toes, it's not totally in the heels, it's kind of in the middle. Now, from here, when you stand up nice and straight, as we say, it's a neutral spine, you should have a line that you could draw, like this left-hand image here, that you could almost draw like a plumb line all the way through your body. And it should join your ankle, go straight up to your mid-knee. So it should cut right through your knee, up through the middle of your hip. Now remember, your hip is not this bony bit on the front. Your hip is actually right in the middle here. So it's right in the middle. It's your greater trochanter. It's that bony bit that's sticking out. That's your mid-hip. Then as you go up through, it should go halfway through your shoulder, so mid-shoulder, and then track through your ear, and then as if it's going up into the sky. Like there is a piece of string hanging from the ceiling, there should be one long line that tracks from your ear, shoulder, hip, knee, and ankle. Now, this might be nice and straightforward. You might do a lot of work on your posture and you're looking in the mirror going, yep, that's about right. Or you could be like me and actually as much work as you do, your ear still sticks forward because you do way too much work on the computer or on your phone. So actually, you just want to pull that chin back in, engage the core a little bit more to align that to that sort of neutral position. Now, I'm a firm believer in, and when we teach people to become personal trainers and fitness instructors, this is what I believe and this is what we stick by every time, that if your client is going to do an exercise, they need to have good corrected posture, so a passive technique, standing in this neutral spine before they try and move. If they start from a crumpled position and then they try and do a bicep curl from here, they're then not going to be in any kind of fit state to make that a decent bicep curl. We can't expect them to have good posture in the movement if they don't have it when they're standing. So start with good principles. Make sure your clients understand about this plumb line, about this neutral spine. Now, most people live in a triple flexed lifestyle. So in fact, as I speak to you now, I'm sitting down at the desk recording this. Most people will sit down all day. They will get up in the morning, they'll sit in their car, they'll go to work, they'll sit down when they get to work. And then when they get to work, they sit down all day. They might go for lunch, which will just mean sitting down at the canteen. And then they might drive home, sitting down, and then they'll get home and they'll sit on the sofa and sit and have their dinner, and then they might sit and watch a film. All this time we're just sitting down, we're in this triple flex position. And if you look at the image on the right here, you'll see that there is this flexion happening at the hip, which means there's 90 degrees at the hip, there's 90 degrees at the knee, and there's 90 degrees at the ankle. And that's what I mean by triple flexed. Hip, knee, and ankle are all flexed. Now, this causes our muscles in our body to react in a certain way. So as a result of sitting all day, every day, our muscles that are naturally have a tightness or a weakness to them. But the ones that are naturally tight get tighter, and the ones that are naturally weak get weaker. And this triple flex position just manifests that even more. It makes it bigger and more powerful. So tighter gets tight. Tight muscles get tighter and weak muscles get weaker. So the tight muscles in our body are our chest. And we only need to know that by literally, like, it takes nothing for our shoulders to be falling forward. And we know our chest is tight. So chest is a tight muscle. Hip flexors are tight. Hamstrings are tight and lower back are tight. These are the main four I want you to be thinking about as tight muscles in most people. Then from a weak muscle point of view, it's usually the opposite of those, but there's three key ones. The mid traps, so these are the muscles that squeeze the shoulder blades together. They're obviously opposite to the chest. The gluteals, so your butt is generally really weak. It doesn't activate very often, and especially if we're sitting down all day, it's really stretched out. And also the core itself, so the core is not often very engaged. Remember these, because this will really influence your programming. So if I have somebody that sits down all day every day and they come to me and they go, I really want to get a massive chest, I want to sort of get really good pronounced chest muscles, then I'm actually going to look at it and go, well, you know what, I don't need to train their chest loads, because if I just train their chest massively, just chest, we don't do any back, and then they sit down all day and they work at a computer and they drive and they're just tighter and tighter along these chest muscles, it's only going to start influencing their posture. So instead of looking like a nice plumb line from the side, their shoulders start falling forward, their neck starts reaching forward, their ears fall forward of that midline. So we want to be able to always aim to get back to this neutral position. And we do that by stretching out the tight muscles and activating the weak muscles, which is what we're going to look at now. So the two golden tips: stretch the tight and activate the weak, and then choose a balanced program, which if so, especially if it's severe, so choose a balanced program that's got a mixture of front and back. It's got a mixture of using both the tight and the weak muscles. If they've got quite severe posture damage, so like I said with that guy that's very heavily worked chest and sits down all day and his shoulders fall forwards, I want to be favoring the weaker muscles 2-1 in order to correct that. So I'm going to do back twice a week and I'm going to just do chest once a week. I've got really weak glutes and very tight hip flexors. I want to be working the glutes, I work my hip flexors in order to do this 2 steps forward, 1 step backward kind of approach of actually making some progress. Whereas if I keep it totally balanced, I might not actually progress. I've started as well. Now, I've put in a bonus video next to this video that is all about how to plan a balanced program, how to consider the agonist and antagonist muscles. So have a little look at that if you want to look more for the planning for that in particular. Now, let's have a look at what types of exercises are universally classed as being beneficial to our posture. Walking. Now, this one's no surprise, especially if you walk with good posture, like with that neutral spine that we were just talking about. Your glutes are activated, your hip flexors are stretching, your lower back gets some movement, you get to open up the chest. It's a fantastic exercise, and you get some core activation as well. It's actually perfect. Rowing exercises are fantastic because they squeeze the mid back together and they stretch out the chest. So anything where you're doing like a seated row or any rowing action really, in that motion, you're going to be stretching out the chest and engaging the mid-back. Squats are fantastic because they promote glute engagement. Obviously, all these only count if you've got good technique in the actual moment. That's a very important thing to say. Core exercises are beneficial, and also things like Pilates and yoga, whereby you're mostly using the weaker areas and you're demanding of your body, especially in relation to core and glutes and legs. They're going to really, really impact. So Pilates and yoga are also classed as exercises specifically beneficial to posture. Now, the reason why for Pilates and yoga in particular is because they also have a very, very key understanding of technique and quality. And because they really focus on quality, the technique side of it is tight. It means that actually it's all working towards that common goal of stretching out the tight and activating the weak. Now, another thing to consider of all of this is to make sure that passive posture is all set up properly before it goes into an active posture. This is what I said about standing neutrally. Can they maintain that before they start heading into doing the exercise itself? Also consider things like postural compensation. Are they moving around pain spots? Do they have certain habits? Have they been carrying their kid on their hip for ages, and as a result, their hips are all wonky and their ribs stick out to the side? Have they got a difference in their skeletal structure? Maybe one leg's longer than another. Maybe they've got really tight muscles in a certain area. This is going to change how they move, and we want to be able to notice those at the very least and correct wherever we can. And also we want to consider the engagement of the muscles. So for example, let's take that rowing exercise whereby they're doing a seated row and they're pulling backwards and they're squeezing the shoulder blades together. As they do that, that means nothing unless they actually physically think about that mind-muscle connection and they're squeezing and engaging the muscles that are supposed to be engaging rather than engaging something totally different. So for example, a seated row done wrongly could be pulling it from your lower back, so you kind of pull all the way backwards, which is very different to just engaging through from moving the shoulder blades. So that, for example, is all about engagement of muscles. So it's not just what exercises you do, it's about the quality of the exercise that you do as well. Now, for your exam, it's probably going to be looking more along with what types of exercises are beneficial to posture. But for when you're working with clients, it is really important to consider that quality is probably the when your client is moving. So we're actually at the end of this module. So I want to kind of complete it by giving you a little bit of a a quiz question to prepare you for this multiple choice exam that you have ahead of you, but also just let you know again that you can now download and complete that cheat sheet. Remember, watch that bonus video that's next to this video as well, and it'll sort of give you even more chance to be able to sort of go through and test your learning, check that all this has gone through and in your head. So here's a quick question for you. What is a long-term adaptation to regular cardiovascular training? Is it A, reduced resting heart rate, B, reduced cardiac output, C, increased blood pressure, or D, increased risk of heart disease? So remember what we spoke about with this one. Give yourself a chance to answer it. Remember what I spoke about. What one is a benefit to the body? What is more efficient? What one do we want? So you should now have your answer. I'll give you another couple of seconds. 5, 4. Okay, so you should have your answer, and you should have answer A. So A is correct. So what is a long-term adaptation to regular cardiovascular training? So if we do cardiovascular training on a regular basis, regularly walking, running, cycling, etc., we will eventually get a reduced resting heart rate, which is a sign our heart is getting fitter, healthier, and stronger. Perfect. Lovely. But answer is A. So from here, I just want to recap what we've studied today and what you've learned. You've identified the effect of exercise on the body. You've been able to understand the long-term adaptations of exercising, and that included our cardiovascular and our musculoskeletal. Also, we then looked at cardiovascular and musculoskeletal for short-term effects of exercise and the cautions that might sit with that. We then identified smart programming options for clients. We looked at blood pooling and how we need to have that nice, gentle cool down. We looked at DOMS and how we need to take it easy with new beginners. And we looked at posture and how important that quality is in when we're considering the tight and weak muscles of the body as well. And then also ahead of you, you've got the cheat sheet, or you might have already gone through and done that. Once you've considered all of this, if you do want to go back and look through it, obviously you can download this to your phone. You can download the MP3 or MP4 link that's next to the video, and you can just take your time to go through it. And that's what this is all about. It's about revisiting it as many times as you can or need to in order to make it stick. So make sure you sort of download it, listen to it as many times as you can, do the cheat sheet, answer as many sort of questions as you can with it, and also really think about it tangibly. How does this affect you when you're exercising? How does this affect your body long term? And that'll help sort of concrete all the information about the effect of exercise on the body itself. So it's been a pleasure training with you today. I will see you for module 2, but all the best for understanding the effect of exercise on the body. Have a great day and take care.